Yeah, I know exactly where it is over on Primer Road. Like I said, I work for Mission up here at the Austin Center. I do the fire EMS and law enforcement for them, so I pretty much rubber around and figured I'd put a radio in the work truck and put a magnet antenna on it and see who I can talk to. So I'm all around this area all the time.
Are you right there where the truck gate is, or are you the one over by the control tower over there where they actually keep the big fire truck?
Cover the whole Dawson campus, so yeah, we do all of them. The over there by the fire tower, that's prime. We go over there for a bunch of things, but over here by the US-1 and Mark and Twill and all that, so I pretty much govern all of them. Like I said, I do all the fire, EMS, and law enforcement for when the big blue trucks. If you've been out here and all, we're the ones that have to sign the permits for when you work on the doors and stuff.
Yeah, Roger. Well, when you go into US-1 right there, the truck side, when you go in by the little park they got, I think it's salt ball field or whatever right there, once you go in right there and you turn into the truck gate, you go in through the truck gate right there, that whole new section they built around through there, we did all the doors in that, you know, right before I got laid off over yonder. And if you go all the way around through there and go all the way up into the back of the building back there, I can't remember his name. I think it's Brian Stryker or something like that. I did a door and an operator back there for him. Been a little while back. Something happened to their operator, and we had to go out and replace it and rewire another one. But, yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of work in Michelin out there, man, over the years. I mean, back when, I can't remember what that bay is. It's back there around where the cafeteria is right there in the back, where they back down in that thing that's got the two doors. I can't remember if it's one door or two doors. It might be two doors. It's like a rolling steel that closes up after the truck gets in the hole. But there's a wall back there, got the loading dock, and they busted that wall down. It's been a long time ago, man. I mean, they backed into that thing so hard so many times that the bricks was about to fall out there, so they had to take it all out and redo it. We had to take all the doors out and put the doors back up when they was done. That was an all-day thing. We didn't leave out there at about 2 o'clock in the morning.
They tear up a lot of stuff around there, for sure, huh? You know, there's several different docks, you know. I think you're talking about Oak Dock there, but they got two warehouse dock, and then that new building you just talking about, they still trying to put stuff in there, but they, we got all kind of doors around here today, and they hard on them, boy. I'm going to tell you, they, especially these forklift drivers, they're running over all kind of stuff and tear things all to pieces.
That's, forklift drivers keeps us in business, man. Forklift drivers, truck drivers, and, some of the fire truck and the EMS. Because some of the EMS departments, they'll have the doors open on the side of the trucks and forget about it and go to go out the door and tear out the jam or something. We've had that to happen a lot. Fire department's the same way. You know, some of them's got them fold-out doors, you know, that some of the fire trucks don't have to roll-up doors like the little rolling steel doors or whatever. They don't have those in them, and some of them have the old doors still in them, and we've been out several places where they've took out the whole door jam. I mean, concrete door jam. Knock that jugger slap out between two doors.
We've had that a lot, for sure. I've seen a bunch of them jerk slam out the dock plates and everything. I mean, they tear them up. I mean, it's kind of wild. It's like, how in the world did this even happen, you know?
Yeah, sometimes it makes you wonder how it really happened. We had a place over in Donaldson Center right there off of 25, the Matrix. You know, we had a place over there that we just got through redoing the building, our brand new building, just got through putting everything in it. Before the warranty came out, come off the boards, you know, I mean, they was tearing up everything in the building. I'm talking about doors, docks, track, you know, the truck restraints outside. They was jerking the restraints slap off the wall. I mean, they was pulling holes out in the wall big as soda cans where they wasn't releasing the truck restraint, and the truck driver was taking off with them, and they'd pull it halfway out the parking lot. And I guess when it lost power, it'd come on hook. Well, turn around, I'd have to go back, put all that stuff back in, rewire everything back up, and try to patch up the walls and stuff. After a while, man, I finally told them at the company, I was like, man, we need to quit trying to warranty this stuff because it's not warranty. At this point, they just basically tearing it all up. And when they started charging them, boy, I tell you what, stuff started changing then.
Man, I got to get off here. I got to run in the plant right quick and all, but hopefully I won't be out in there long and all. I might key up and see if you're still on here later. But good talking to you. This is KO4 NNR. I'd send you through this time.
Man, will you be good? And I should still be around here. I'll still have it on probably. KO4 NNR. KN4 UBG. Send me threes, and I'll be looking forward to hearing back from you in a little while. UBG, I'll be clear and monitoring.
For UBG, this is KW4TW.
Go ahead. I didn't quite catch the call sign, but KN4 UBG.
KW4TW, Kilo Whiskey 4, Tango Whiskey.
Kilo Whiskey 4, Tango Hotel?
No whiskey. Keep waiting for that woman. Keep walking the walk.
Man, it takes me a little bit to catch on to some of the call signs. There's so many of them out there. You get used to a few of them, man. They's always that weird when it comes in.
I started out as a KF4 call. So I've been through a couple call signs over here myself.
That. Well, I've tried to stick into the same one I got now. I mean, sometime, you know, if I ever get all my licenses and stuff, I might go for a vanity call sign one day.
Thought about doing a vanity call, but quite frankly, the vanity call that I'd probably want is probably longer than the one I have.
That's the sad thing, you know, because the one I want, somebody else might already have, you know. That's the thing. That's the only reason I ain't ever tried to do one, you know, or, you know, change it. I figured, you know, when you got the call sign, I kind of figured, you know, I didn't really know a lot about ham radio then, and I know a little bit now, but not a lot, you know. I mean, I'm still learning as I go, but I figured, you know, they would go with, you know, like, you know, the initials of your name or whatever, you know, with the 4 or whatever in it. But no, boy, was I wrong. It took me a while to learn that call sign. And what really got me was the phonetics of it, you know, like Kilo, November 4. You know, I mean, I had to learn what K meant, N meant, 4, U, BG, you know, and I had to learn all that. And then finally, after I started learning that, I was like, oh, yeah, man, I got this. And, you know, it takes a little bit to learn, but, I mean, other than that, it's experience.
Well, that phonetic alphabet, it's reasonably easy. Yeah, I know around here, or where I'm at, oh, gosh. I think I know probably about 3 different phonetic alphabets, maybe 4, and each one's a little bit different. But, you know, the one that I guess we use is everything has a kind of a ring to it, Alpha, November, Golf, et cetera, et cetera, you know. Versus Adam, Nora, Robert, first names of people. You know, that's another one a lot of folks use.
Be a hard one there. I didn't really think about that, but yeah, that would be a hard one to learn. I guess it could be done, though. I mean, you know, I never really thought about that, man. That'd give me something else to think about.
Yeah. I know with my department, there used to be like Ocean, and then amateur radio's Oscar, B as in boy, versus Bravo, and I guess amateur radio. But, you know, here's the thing, though. The phonetic alphabet, the words that you use actually identify, actually can be used to identify your training and what you actually do. It, believe it or not, it's actually an identifier.
Yes, I mean, that's true. I mean, you know, I mean, because a lot of people use the alphabet like that in the military, you know, and yeah, I mean, it, I didn't really look at it that way, but it really does, yeah. And it kind of, I don't know, it kind of helps you as far as, you know, when people ask you, you know, like on the phone, well, you know, how do you spell your name or whatever, you know, and I had that to happen to me today, and I called it out, you know, and done it, you know, whatever you call it on here, I done it like that, and the guy, he says, man, he says, that was pretty good. I was like, yeah. I didn't tell him what I did, you know, but he says, man, he said, that put it down to a T right there. He said, I can understand what you said then.
That works well. I caught the tail end of your conversation with the other gentleman before, I guess he had to, I guess, return back to work or whatever it was that he was doing. It sounded like to me that you've got trucker problems. You had trucker problems. Denied freight haulers. Ripping wires and stuff out of your building and popping holes in the place.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was... Well, see, I do garage doors for a living, and we did a building over in Donaldson Center, a brand new building. And the people had came in to take over the building and run the building that was shipping the parts out didn't know how to work the equipment. You know, like the dock levelers and different things like that. Some of the truck drivers couldn't even back into the hole right without backing into the dock boards and bending dock boards or busting the doors or you know, cracking the concrete and stuff like that. And I used to have to go over there, and they would leave the dock lock on the bumper of the truck, the tractor and trailer. They would leave those things locked, and the truck driver, you know, 80,000-pound load, when he takes off, you know, the dock is already locked to the truck, and all he would do is pull the concrete bolts out of the ground. I mean, all he would do is fill a bump, and that was it. You know, it done took off and ripped the wires out of it. And I guess when he ripped the wires out, you know, the dock lock would fall, you know, close itself up. And I'd have to go back out there and take them things, put them back in, and try to epoxy the wall and different things to try to hook those things back up. And I don't know, it used to be a mess, man. And we started charging them because we were doing some of it under warranty, you know, because they was acting like that it was malfunctioning. And come to find it out, it wasn't malfunctioning. I mean, people went out there and watched them, and they would send the trucks out without even unlocking them. And well, we started charging for it. When we started charging them, they really started improving on their owner's manuals and things like that.
Let's see now, that dock lock, or the locking mechanism that locks the trailer into place, that thing goes around the DOT bumper. Should be in the center of the door, and to keep damage from happening to the deck plates or anything of that like, they should also have rubber bumpers that the truck will actually bump into, as to not to cause any damage to the deck plates.
They had bumpers on the wall. They had the 4-inch bumpers. It looked like you took tires and cut chunks out of the tire and put them in there and bolted everything together on, you know, angle iron. And no, man, they would try to back in there crooked, and they would sometimes miss those bumpers and catch the dock, you know, and mess up the truck shelters and all kinds of stuff, man. I mean, they was tearing that place down out there. I mean, brand new building. I mean, that thing had like, I can't remember how many doors in it. I think there was like 100 and some doors, 126 doors in that building. And they was tearing that thing apart, man, in less than 6 months.
There are a couple reasons for that. They might even have the wrong bumpers on those doors. A 4-inch bumper. That just don't seem right to me for some reason. That just don't seem right. And I know the ones you're talking about. I actually drive a truck. I'm one of those beady-eyed freight hauling 18-wheeler people that we were talking about. By trade, I'm an electrician, though. But worked in wastewater also. But that's just beside the point.
Yeah, those bumpers, you know, them things is like, I think they're like 10 inches wide, and I'm thinking they're like 12 inches tall, 4 inches off the wall, 4-inch offset. And, you know, that was the standard that went with the lips, you know, because you could only have, you know, you got like a 16-inch lip on them things. And, you know, 12 and 4, that's 16 inches. You know, that would only give you like, I think it was like 12 inches to be in the back of the truck, you know. And some of them truck drivers, man, over there, I don't know where they came from. You know, some of them were Spanish and different places. And I think at the time when they first started shipping out of there, that was back when some of these truck drivers was coming up here from Mexico, and they was having the little pieces of paper written up on the door, you know, stating what company they work for. And I guess they've done a little bit better since then by now, you know, because, I mean, when they first came up here, man, they jumped in that building and they just went wide open. I mean, you know, it's BMW parts. I mean, they didn't really care, you know. And finally, after a while, we went back out there and put plates on the wall and had to epoxy those plates into the wall to where it would hold the hold downs, you know. I mean, it started bending bumpers on trucks, you know, other than tearing the bricks out of the wall. I mean, we had to go out there and do a lot. We had to do 1-inch steel plates and put big long anchors into the wall and take that epoxy stuff that you mix. It's like two tubes that mixes together, or you can buy it in a capsule, either one, which where some of the walls were hollow, the capsules wouldn't work because when you drill the hole in the wall, you drop the capsule in there and the capsule disappears, so there wasn't no way to bust it. So we had to rely on the double caulking gun thing to where it all mixed into one, epoxy all that stuff in and anchor that stuff to 12 inches of concrete on the ground and set the dock locks on them plates, and that worked out a lot better that way.
I actually know what you're talking about there. I've actually put some of those suckers in, but mine was for motors. You know, you got your concrete form there, and then you put you drill your holes down in the concrete for your bolts. And you've got this little bolt with a tube on the end of it, and you just shoot it down through there, hammer it into place, and, you know, that little thing there, it pops, and it seals itself within the concrete. And I'm going to tell you, a 50-horsepower motor ain't coming up off of that.
Yeah, I mean, we've had to use it, man, to put tracks and stuff on the wall with, you know, for like sliding doors and stuff, because the blocks would be hollow, and we've had to take and, you know, fill the blocks up with something to hold the stuff in there. We've had to take and shoot like foam or something down in the bottom of those holes, and that way that foam would catch whatever we put in there, and it would epoxy into those bricks. We've had to put sliding doors in that way. And we've got a lot of stuff on the wall out there that we've used that stuff on over the years. And I've been doing doors about 18 years. It ain't too much I ain't done seen in 18 years.
Yeah. Well, like you, I've seen some stuff as well. And I got to tell you, I think one of the things that just absolutely blew my mind was I watched this Indian truck driver guy He was standing outside his truck with the door open, backing his truck up, and he was on that, you know, that very top step, and he's letting the truck creep, and he's doing the wheel, you know, he's adjusting the wheel and such in there. And I was like, oh my God, where's my phone? I gotta take this. I gotta get this on, I gotta get this. But I'm like, you know, I was just in shock that I was actually seeing this.
Oh man, I can imagine, man, I've seen some funny stuff in my days. I've seen them open the door and turn around sideways and sit on the side of the seat to watch them back a truck up. I ain't never seen one stand outside the truck yet, but I watched a guy, I can't remember where it was at. I want to say it was over in Duncan. And this guy, man, he had a parking lot. I'm talking about a parking lot long as a football field and probably two times or three times wide as a football field to back a truck in the hole. And I sat there for 45 minutes of my lunch break watching him back a truck into a hole. And he still, at 45 minutes that I've been sitting there eating my lunch, he still hadn't had that truck in the hole. And I finally had to go back to work. I was down the hill from him in another building. And I just thought that was so funny. And we was at Michelin, I guess it's been probably a year ago now, over in Donaldson Center, or not Donaldson Center, but Sandy Flats over in Anderson. And we was at the guard shack getting our badges to get in with. And the guy walks in and he says, I'm here to deliver such and such load, number such and such. And the woman says, yeah, you need to go to something, four dock or something. And he says, yeah, I know where that's at, but I can't get into that dock. And she said, well, why not? He says, you know, I can't back up. He says, I can only drive forward. Do you have a yard jockey? And I mean, I almost fell out the floor laughing when he said that.
I'm sorry, I'm sitting over here laughing. Does he work for UPS or FedEx?
UPS or FedEx. This was a long haul truck driver. I think he came in from somewhere, I don't know if it's California, Colorado, somewhere like that. But I mean, he literally told that lady he could not drive backwards. He says, I can only drive forward. And, you know, I used to drive, what was it, Kenworth 900, 9,000 or something like that, you know, the old long nose truck and the body, the windows and stuff, kind of, you know, tilted back on both sides. Your sleeper kind of looked like a diamond shape in the front. And, you know, and the trailer I drove was a 53-foot logging trailer, and I'm originally from West Virginia, and I had to drive this thing around in some places that we never had guardrails. I mean, we didn't have none of that stuff. I mean, it's almost like what you see is off-road truckers. And I'm talking about sometimes when you come around the curve, you know, your front wheels look like they're about to run over the hill, and the back of your trailer is about to drag the ditch, you know. And there was two turns that the skidder would have to follow me and hold me up around the curve. He would have to grab the right side of the trailer when I'd go up the hill and push up on it so it wouldn't pick the truck up. Because if I tried to go around the curb by myself, it would take the tractor and it would raise the whole driver's side of the tractor off the ground and the other wheels would be spinning. And but he would follow me and push me up over those curves every single time I'd leave. And the only place I was going was like 5 miles away. I mean, I'd leave one place where we was loading the logs and drop them off at another place. And another trucker was coming and picking them up and hauling them down the highway. And I ain't going to lie to you, some of them places, man, if they would take some of the truck drivers today and let them drive, we would find out if they were really good truck drivers or not.
I'm going to tell you, I've been in some places that make your butt pucker. It make your butt cheeks grab a hold of the seat. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I remember sitting up there. I'm like, man, I ain't never coming back here again. I was glad to get out of it alive.
KN4 UBG for ID. Yeah, that, I don't know, man. I did that logging for, I done that for about 8 years back home and on and off for about 8 years. And I done strip mining for a long time, too, driving dump trucks off top of the strip mine, man. And that was another good job. I mean, not a good job. I'll put it this way. Not a good job, but it was a job. Because some of the trucks was wore out, transmissions wore out. I've had them to jump out of gear going downhill, and boy, I tell you what, you talking about your butt puckering up then, you're trying to get that joker back in gear. I've had to go down the hill, have my foot, you know, kind of touching the brake pedal, and have my right foot over here holding my gear shifter in gear. That's a scary feeling.
Got some weak or some bad bands going south in that transmission, too. Man, I don't know. I know with this company I was with, man, I was pretty fortunate for the most part. But, gosh, I remember going away and going around some nice kiss your butt curves and all that kind of cute stuff. Had to really watch my trailer, make sure I wasn't going over into the other lane or anything. That was nice. I couldn't believe that we were routed that way. But we were, so that's the way we went. And I remember talking to my fleet manager later on that evening and saying, man, I don't know who thought this was a good idea.
I've been to some of them places too, man. We used to move mobile homes for Lester's Mobile Homes in West Virginia. And, you know, you took them two double wides down the road, you know, you and your buddy behind you. You know, them things is 80 feet long. And I tell you what, you know, that's a scary feeling. Especially down through Mohawk, West Virginia. You know, I mean, it's curb after curb. It looked like they followed a black snake down through there. There's two really big sharp turns out there. You got Mohawk Holler, and then you got Long Pole Holler. That looks like a horseshoe. On Old 52 in West Virginia. And both of those places, one of them has a bridge, and the other one is like a road that goes up the holler and a road that went down toward the railroad tracks, right in the middle of that horseshoe. And you could make that turn pretty easy. You know, I mean, you just had to work with it around that turn, but the one at the end of Long Pole Holler, you always had to get the wedges out and the hole. You know, that's where you'd always have to shift the trailer to get it around through there, because if you didn't shift the trailer to get it around that curve, you know, you had the bridge, and the sides on the bridge was a little bit too tall. You'd have to pull up, back up, pull up, back up, pull up, back up, so that whole trailer shifted from on the right side of the road to the left side of the road. You know, it would have to shift all the way to your driver's side in order to get that joker around that turn. And both ends of the bridge, you would have to shift that jugger. It'd take you about 3.5 hours to get that whole trailer run through there, and you'd have to do two of them. And that was a scary feeling there, too, moving mobile homes back there.
Hey, this, that don't sound like fun at all to me. man, I know there was a time when this company had me go pick up paper product. It was recycled paper product. And they wanted me to back up into a dock. I'm like, okay, no problem. You know, and I was like, there's nothing really to guide by. But I got out and I just kind of walked it about where I figured my wheels would be at. And I just shot it on back up through there and just backed it on up through there. So kind of surprised me that I didn't have more of a time with it, especially considering how the ground was. And, I mean, there were like big ruts and stuff, and ruts and just big divots mobile tractor tire divots in the road, in the roadway, and it was basically gravel and mud. Heavy on the mud.
Heavy on the mud, yeah, because that, I ain't gonna lie to you, man, back in West Virginia, some of the places we used to have to put mobile homes. If you ever have time, pull up Isabam, West Virginia, and pull up War Eagle, West Virginia, and follow the road on the map. Follow that road up over that mountain. I mean, it'll show you the whole road, step by step, up over that mountain. It'll show you how many turns it's got. And we used to have to take mobile homes over in that place. That's where I lived at, was War Eagle, West Virginia. And I lived in Longpole, West Virginia, too. And I ain't gonna lie to you, man, that's the only place I used to hate to have to take a mobile home trailer, because there never was guardrails or none of that stuff. And sometimes you'd have to take the little thing, I forgot what you called that thing, we called it a creeper. Looked like a small bulldozer with a, no blade on it, but it had a ball on it to where you hook to a mobile home or whatever. Sometimes we'd have to take those things, and it had a I-beam thing made for the back of the trailer and went under the back of your frame, and that thing would pick up that I-beam after you clamped that I-beam to the frame. It would pick it up and kind of help you slide that trailer around the curves to get that thing around some of the turns. And you talking about scary feeling. That's a scary feeling when you got something like that behind you pushing and your door is right beside the edge of the bank. You know, that's just wondering if it's going to slide you over the hill or not.
It sounds like you've got a lot of experience doing this stuff. And I'm going to tell you, I know me personally, and I'm sure you've had the same experience as well, but you've probably gotten through some stuff as I have before, and I'm like, dude, I never want to do that again. I'm just sitting here thinking about that. It's like when your day's over, or when you're through it, and you're able to finally hit asphalt again, you're mighty thankful that there's asphalt that you're able to drive on the rest of the way.
I agree with you, man. I've been in some of those spots where I'm like, okay, if I ever get out of this, I don't ever want to come back and do this again. I mean, I've been in them spots. Even in the logging business, man, I've been in some hairy situations. I've done logging in the wintertime, man, and, if you ever watch logging on TV in the wintertime, they tell you not to never scrape the road in the wintertime when the skidder makes the big deep ruts in the road. You know, leave them deep ruts in the road, because that is like a railroad track. That will help you go. That's true. But also, there's times it's almost like a train derailment. You're going to run out of that rut. I run out of that rut one time and run over the hill, and, boy, you talking about somebody tightening it up. I had almost a whole load of trees behind me, and it's one of the biggest skidders that I've ever drove in my life, one of the biggest John Deere's, one of the newest ones that ever came out then. It's a grapple skidder, or it was a cable skidder, and at the time we was using it as a cable skidder because the logs was so big. These things 2 and 3 foot in diameter, and I had like 20 of them behind there. If I could have got all 20 of them to the laydown yard, we could have loaded a whole 53-foot trailer with all 20 of those. And he'd have had a complete load. Well, I was coming down the hill and come over top of the hump and turned to the left to go down the hill, and that joker just picked me up and just pushed me right out of the road, just as free as you please. And I was looking for another way to go, because at that point, the only place I could go was down the holler. And they wasn't nothing but stumps. And, well, I had the blade buried up in the dirt on the front of the skidder, to kind of keep me there. Well, what I had to do, I had to run up the hill, hook the cable to a tree with one of my chokers, and unhook the other cables and kind of pull the skidder back up in the road and get re-hooked up to every single log that I had. Took me about 45 minutes to do that. That was about the scariest that I'd ever been, other than driving the tractor and trailer moving mobile homes.
Tell you what's truth, I know that's got to be a bad feeling. I know that's got to be a bad feeling. yeah, I don't know about you, but I've seen some of this stuff here on TV when I come home and such that I'm trying to remember, it's like the most dangerous roads, some of the roads that these folks are trucking on, and I don't think, you know, these aren't 53 footers like what you and I drive, or flatbeds with a heavy haul or anything of that like. These remind you more so of like a mini old Vietnamese dump truck or something. But just some of the roads that they're on, it's amazing. I don't think I'd want to ride a bicycle down that road.
Yeah, that's true, man. There's some of those roads I wouldn't even want to ride a four-wheeler down. I've watched some of that stuff. I watch it all the time on YouTube, man, where they do stuff like over, you know, over, what do you call it? I can't remember what you call that place. It's, you know, it's like the, what do you call it, desert hauling or whatever they call that. But they do it through the jungle and all that stuff. I mean, I've watched a lot of that stuff, man. I'm like, no, I don't see that.
Get out of Columbia. And, yeah, we're talking about the same thing. Oh, man. I know there was one episode I saw here a few weeks back, and I just kind of laughed about this. Apparently, they rode by someone's house. They took their electric power pole down. The homeowner chased them down and made them pay them for the damage they caused. They took the power pole down. I think they messed up some of the shingles on the roof. It's like a clay, a terracotta kind of roof kind of thing. But, yeah, I was like, oh, boy. That little woman is mad, too. Can't understand a word she's saying, but she's mad.
Yeah, I mean, you see that all the time, man. I mean, you even see that around here. I mean, where truck drivers go through and hauling heavy equipment and stuff, and they don't pay no attention to the overhead, you know, guide wires and stuff like that, man. We used to have those things all the time back home. You'd have a guide wire going across the road to another telephone pole that was holding up another pole on the other side of the road, and they'd take out both of them at the same time. Finally, they got to where they started raising up the power poles, making them a little bit taller, you know, and you didn't hardly see it that much anymore, you know, and I don't know, there's a lot that they done right before I moved out, you know, because it used to be a dirt road over there where I used to live, and they came in there and paved it. They paved it like a one-and-a-half-lane road, you know. I mean, still to pass somebody on it, you would still have to run off the pavement in order to pass somebody. They still never did put up no guardrails or anything, and it was just weird, man. I mean, it's just, you know, blowing my mind. I mean, because they said back, you know, I don't know, about the time, you know, right before I was born and all, they said, you know, back, I don't know, around 78 or whatever, or a little before that, that it used to be a two-lane road over there, and they just, you know, the county or the state just let it go to waste. And every time it come up for, like, maintenance or whatever, you know, for, they go in and put salt and stuff on it in the wintertime, and I guess the salt finally eat the pavement up, and finally just whenever they went there and scraped the road, they scraped it all off and rolled it over the hill, and that was it. And they never did fix it back. But right before I moved down here, I think it was about 6 months before I moved here. I moved here 3 months into '99, and they fixed it. And I think that was right there about '98, about 3 months before the end of '98 is when they fixed it.
I don't know. That's just one of them things. I think, I bet sometimes after some of that mess you've seen out there on the road, I bet sometimes you're just grateful just to be doing garage work or garage doors now.
This way, I'm glad to be stationed near you for the time being. You know, I don't know, man. you know, getting a little up there in age, you know, I mean, yeah, I know there's people out there older than I am, but, you know, doing the strip mining and coal mining and stuff like that, man, I mean, I'm 42 years old, and I feel like I'm 92 years old. And I'm kind of glad not to be doing none of that stuff no more. I mean, when I was in my teens and I was in my 20s, I mean, I was so happy to be doing that stuff. I mean, I was almost like a stuntman, you know. But now, no, I don't want to be around that stuff anymore. I mean, that, climbing trees and stuff, man, I used to climb trees for a living and then cut the tops and stuff out of them. And never use spikes. I never used spikes to cut down trees with. You know, I'd use ropes and swing around in trees like a bunch of monkeys. But, you know, now, about 20 feet off the ground, I'm about done. You get to thinking, you know, your bones don't grow back like they used to anymore.
What you're saying there, I say, I know when I hit about 28, 29 years old, I didn't really much care to go up on top of rubs or anything like that. I mean, I did a few. Okay, I did more than a few, but the thing is I think I hit that certain age, and I didn't really want to do that no more. And by the time I hit 35, I didn't climb up on no roof for nothing. As far as that goes, I got to where I didn't even want to climb a ladder. And, you know, in my younger days, man, I'd be up on top of an A-frame with the center, you know, extended out and working on gym lights or something. Those salon halogen lights or whatever. And, you know, it's just, I think it's, you get a certain age and you just don't, I don't know if you want to do that anymore or if there's a fear associated with that or what. I mean, I just, even now, you know, I wouldn't want to climb up on top of a tanker because I don't think my balance let me do that. I'd be kind of bashful about that until, I guess, probably I did it. But I know I've had to climb up in the back of a 53-foot truck without a dock, you know, and secure load and pouring down rain and ice and snow and all that kind of cute stuff. And I know one time I was up in Utah securing a load up in Salt Lake City. And I mean, it was snowing like crazy up there. Went from no snow to about 6-8 inches of snow just like that. Ice and everything else. And my co-driver, who's actually 10 years or my junior, he was just raising Cain that that company there wouldn't let me go inside and go to the dock to secure that load.
I did some of that myself, man, logging and stuff, you know, having to secure loads and pouring down rain and sleet and snow. And I don't know, man, I'm just so thankful now that, you know, I mean, I don't have to do all that, you know, I mean, I moved down here, was intending to get back into the truck driving, but I don't know, I just never did, you know, never did seek it no more after I left up there. I mean, I got into more doing the heavy equipment and stuff, you know, I mean, I kind of looked at it this way, you know, my boss tell me what he wants done, I tell the equipment what to do, you know, and that was, you know, a lot less strenuous on the body, you know, I mean, and stuff like that, I mean, it, you know, you worked out really, really well in that, you know, in that kind of work, you know, but, and then, I don't know, there one year, we got to where we didn't hardly have no work whatsoever. I mean, we'd only work like 5 days out of a whole month. And I was like, man, done that about 3 months. I was about to lose everything I had. And that's when I stepped out of road construction and stepped into the door business. And been doing it now for about 18 years and ain't missed a beat, man. And other than, you know, being out for the COVID right now, I mean, that's the only other thing, you know. And really, I mean, I don't feel like I have the COVID. I'm beginning to wonder if it's a positive, you know. I mean, I had a headache and stuff, you know, that first day, Tuesday, when we went and got tested. But my wife, she was really sick, and my mother-in-law was really sick. Matter of fact, my wife's at the hospital right now trying to get something for her cough and stuff. And I turned around and woke up yesterday, and my legs and stuff was hurting a little bit, and my head, you know, kind of felt like a sinus infection. And started coughing that stuff up, man, and, you know, spitting it out or whatever, and I mean, I feel good now. I mean, I don't feel like anything's bothering me. But it kind of makes me wonder, like I said, if that was a false positive.
Well, man, I'm sorry to hear that, first of all. Secondly, oh, gosh. Have you lost your sense of taste or smell?
November 4, Uniform Bravo Golf. No. Not really lost my smell. I'm not really lost my taste. I mean, it got a little bit dull there one day. I mean, it's like, you know, with my nose stopped up, I couldn't smell that much through my nose. But as far as, like, you know, how you open your mouth the first food or whatever, you can still get the taste into your mouth, you know, that way. But no, I mean, other than that, I've not lost no type of appetite. I mean, I've been eating like a horse and been drinking like a camel. And I don't know, man. Doing good. I mean, as far as that goes, I mean, only thing that hurts at times is my ankles, my toes, my knuckles on my hands and my wrist. On both my hands, you know, that's the only thing that really bothers me. You know, and other than, you know, my sinus is draining, no, I mean, I've been feeling good.
Man, that's actually probably a good thing. Let's see here. Now, quite frankly, man, I had it back in towards the end of December on up into January, and I was down for a while with it. I'm going to say my temperature spiked up to about 104. That's about the highest temperature that I've ever had in my life. But let's see. I had a number, it was like 103.3, 0.6, and that kind of thing. But the highest was 104. Muscle aches, body aches, no sense of smell. My eyes hurt. Headaches, of course. I was a wreck here for a while. As a matter of fact, I think I'd even lost my voice. Couldn't breathe. Felt like in my lungs, it felt like I had razor blades in my lungs, and when I try to breathe deep, it's like it cut me or something. That's what it felt like. It was painful to breathe.
Believe it or not, I've not had nary bit of that. I mean, now my ribs has been a little sore. I mean, you know, on both sides. But other than that, I mean, I've not really coughed that much. I probably ain't coughed 40 times since they told me I tested positive. I mean, it's not no actual hard cough or nothing. It's just because it just feels like my sinuses is draining down in my throat, and I can feel something tickle back there, so I have to cough to get it up. You know, but other than that, I mean, I feel good. I feel like I can get out here and run a marathon right now.
Well, I'm not going to be running a marathon, but let's see. Now, months later here, we're already into March, and I still have dulled taste, smell. I can detect salt. And that's honestly really about it. I know if I eat something hot because my forehead, my nose start kind of, you know, you get that little bead of sweat there. So I know it's hot. And I have a thing, I actually kind of like some spicy foods there. But it takes the joy of eating away. And I'm a big old fat guy, and I like to eat.
about 325 or 320 to about 335, something like that. I mean, I various, you know, sometimes I'll be down about 315, 312, and next thing I know, I'll be up to 335 again. But it really depends. I mean, I don't think I've lost any weight in these last week, you know, I mean, since, you know, Tuesday. Nothing else. I've probably done gained another 5 pounds. So, yeah, I mean, I'm a pretty big boy, you know, 6'1", and about as strong as an ox. And I don't know, that might be another reason why, you know, it ain't really got me down. I mean, I can tell in the last 10 years I'm not as strong as I used to be in the last 10 years, but I ain't going to say I done turned into a complete teddy bear just yet, but it's on its way.
I know for me, man, I've got about 7 years on you. So, quite frankly, man, I'm starting to lose muscle mass. And that's just what's happening. Quite frankly, yeah, man, my health is going to kablooey. But some days I just feel about as weak as a dish rag. Other days are better, you know, but, yeah, I guess there's probably other stuff going on there. And, you know, you battle diabetes and that kind of thing as well, but, and that's always a battle. But, I think some days, man, I'm more fit and stronger in my mind than what I am in my body. Because I'll guarantee you this, and this will happen to you also if it hasn't already. In your mind, you'll say, oh, yeah, we can do that, not a problem, get her done. And then your body will say, whoa, hold on a minute there, big fella.
I do have a little bit of that going on now. You know, I mean, I've lost a lot of muscle mass. You know, my arms used to be really, really big. And, you know, I don't know, I mean, back in the day, man, I mean, I used to pick up 435 pounds out of the floor. You know, like it wasn't nothing as far as deadlifting and stuff, you know. 400 pounds or something like that as far as bench pressing. But now, no, trust me. I took my little one over here to the gym over here at Planet Fitness in Simpsonville, and I don't know, I think about as much as I got up was about 225, and then that was really pushing it. And I only done that like 4 times, and that was it. I mean, I had to put the bar up. And I think squatting, as far as most of us squatted, was about 350 pounds. Now my legs, I can push over 1,000 pounds with my legs. That ain't no problem. You know, but when it comes down to my back and my shoulders and stuff now, no. Trust me, I've really slowed down there. And I do understand what you're saying there. Yeah, I have started losing momentum as far as, you know, picking up what I used to do and stuff that I used to move, you know. You know, it ain't nothing like it used to be, no. Even at 42, I'm fixing to be 43 this year. And I believe everything my wife tells me. There's 13 years difference between me and my wife. I think she's 55 and I'm 42, so fixing to be 43. And she's always told me, she said, you know, you behind me. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm behind you. And I can really tell, you know, after I hit 40, I can really tell it.
Well, I think now when I turned 35, that's when I started putting on weight. Up until that time, I'd always been, you know, reasonably lean. I've got a stocky build. And that kind of thing. Now I think people look at me and they know I'm on the level because of the bubbles in the middle.
About where I'm at. I told my wife a while back, I said, yeah, I said, you remember when me and you first got together, I said, my sexy build I used to have, I said, you always told me, you know, my rear end used to look good. I said, now I ain't got a rear end. I said, it done moved up to the middle section. I said, you know, now the middle section's popped out and the rear end's gone because I have to almost get suspenders to hold my pants up now. And I joke with her all the time, telling her, I said, you know, you called that. Well, I didn't call that. I said, yeah, you did. You was cooking 3 meals a day then. I said, I wasn't used to that from being from the hills of West Virginia.
KW4TW. Have mercy. Oh, boy. Well, I guess it's going to happen to all of us, man. We get older. I know my dad told me here before he died that, you know, some stuff I had to look forward to. I guess since I was about maybe 20 years old, you know, he'd tell me stuff I had to look forward to. And I was with my dad when he had both of his knees replaced and heart stents and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think some of it, man, it's just a matter of time. But I don't know. It's something, man. And, you know, we're all going to be here till we're not here, I guess. But I guess we got to try to enjoy it while we can. I try to tell my son, you know, bend your knees when you pick up stuff and, you know, use proper lifting techniques and stuff like that. Save your back. And I'll be the first one to tell you, I use proper lifting techniques, always have. But I've always done that. You know, I worked out at Charlotte Douglas the last, I guess, 2 years that I was there. I went to work down in the bag room. And, you know, we pretty much had to handle about every bag we checked and scanned, screened, or whatever. So, there's a lot of 100-pound bags there. And even from that, man, I've got injuries. I have pulled tendons in my arms. So that's not good either. And when I got to tell somebody about it, they said, Mike, look, don't report it. Just work through it or whatever. Go see your doctor and handle it, you know, whatever you got to do. Just don't file a workman's comp claim, because if you do, they'll get rid of you. They'll figure out a way to get rid of you. And I was a federal employee, man, so I was like, okay, you know, and me, two new cars and a new house that I'm paying for and everything, you just kind of accept the injuries, work through it, try to figure a way around it and kind of carry on. But even doing electrical, you know, my hands are about to the point where turning a screwdriver, keeping a hold of a screwdriver is pretty much a task now. Best thing I can do is just grip a steering wheel and drive.